Very humble person, Charlie.
I repeat what smarter people say. That's my entire job description.
That is all I do too. I'm just a humble podcaster and an asker of dumb questions, just like you for the most part. This is what we do. But welcome back, everybody, to the Bitcoin Weekly Kickback. It's Labor Day, so it's a holiday. So we're getting paid double time today. Double of nothing is still freaking nothing.
We only
So
gotta split the
thanks for
money.
coming.
We only gotta split the money three ways instead of four this time.
Yes,
Good luck with it.
exactly. 100%. But we're just talking as we do. And I have notes, things to talk about, lots of stuff around proof of work today, mining. We're bringing back Fractal again because it's so interesting. But you guys are talking about something that involves a rodent, something called the rat. And I don't, what in the world is this?
Charlie,
Donnie,
how do you
what's
say
the
the rat?
rat?
How do you say it from the outside perspective? Because I can't say it shortly.
I don't think.
Me?
Yeah.
Back before reinscription was really a thing, and before there was anybody doing this, Donnie had this idea that I've got a rat inscription that I'm going to send to people and kind of handhold them, and they can inscribe rat-related things onto this inscription, and it's become kind of a who's who of ordinals and this
Like a
great
yearbook.
living community project of the most reinscribed asset, I think, right? So
I think
yeah.
it is, and that's what I was trying to say earlier. And I'll go back to like what the rat is, in a sec. But when you make a parent-child collection and you go to the parent on ordinals.com, and let's say there are 200 children or something like that, it breaks it up into two pages. There's only 100 per page. Nobody's ever reinscribed more than 100 things. So now that there are 101 on it, it didn't go to a second page. There's no pagination or page separation of reinscriptions because it's never like been an issue to do that. So if we have 1,000 inscriptions at the end of this year on the rat, it's just going to be one long tail of rats that doesn't get paged off, which is funny. We just didn't know that was going to happen. And over the course of doing this, we've exposed a lot of like weaknesses in marketplaces and wallets indexing and displaying one DAT or one UTXO that has a ton of inscriptions backed into it. So we just like we're kind of breaking stuff along the way because it was early and nobody was really using reinscription for anything. And still it's kind of not, except for clerical items, I guess, on like Ordzar, most things are reinscribed and some of the gamified things like Game of Blocks used reinscription in order to indicate gameplay. But what the rat was about, I was on a space one day. I bonked my head like 20 years ago and I can't form memories. So I was like, what happens if I try to draw something from memory? Like, what does it look like? I was like, what if I draw myself as a rat? What does it come out looking like? It turns out it comes out looking like a no rat in every rat. There's no characteristics really at all, except that it's like a line drawn rat. So it doesn't really look like any specific rats. And then I thought to myself, well, I wonder what other people think of when they think of rat. Like what pops into their heads because they can't separate their experience in the past from their current experience now, where I can't bring my experience in the past into my current experience. So what would the difference be in what they see versus what I see? And a fun way to explore what reinscription can do, other than building like three like data trees or something like that, is to pass it around and let people scribble on it. So we did that for a while. It got stuck in a bunch of wallets, and a year later, it's now in Sanj's wallet, and he does all the reinscribing of people's submissions. But we're still just sort of like manually taking submissions of what people think of when they think of rats, and really not saying no to anyone because that's not the point of Bitcoin or expression or art or whatever. There's a one of the most recent ones is just two naked feet holding a rat in between them, and it's like I don't see the value of that, but I don't have to. That's not the point. The point is that someone else saw that, right? But now it has 101 inscriptions on it, which I think is the, as far as I've seen, most inscribed that
And it just
most
got
individual things on.
got RAF, the Ord client and GitHub maintainer interested in it, which
Really
is
exciting.
I would say the first big is I don't know, you're a celebrity, Donnie, but like
If
A tier like celebrity, I
there
think.
are only two A-tier people being Raf and Casey, yeah, this is
Casey,
the
yeah.
first one. Or if it's like you, Raf, Casey, and Aaron or something, it's the first of that group. But honestly, like the first eight people to inscribe on it were Sanj, Lifo, Jip, who else? I don't know, whatever. There's like 10 devs were the
Yeah.
first people. Zero was on
It
there too.
it's become such a cool community project, and I remember like little week-long events where it got stuck in someone's wallet or something, and then
months.
Yeah, so it was coming, manually split a UTXO, send that out. It was, it's been this great story, and it's taken on a life of its own. And I just love that you started it. So it keeps
Thanks.
Living on.
Dude, yeah, it keeps happening.
That is so dope. And just for people, because like I had to think about like recursion and like reinscriptions. Reinscriptions are like it's like a stacking of the paper, right? Like the top is the top one always the one that gets presented. So the most recent reinscription,
first
or is it
one
a choice.
The first one is always the one that gets displayed, because
so the original is the one that always shows, and then you have to click on the explorer page. You can page down and see. Okay,
they're listed on ord.io. But they're displayed in full on ordinals.com. So you can click individually on the inscriptions that are re-inscriptions on ord.io, but only the first one shows. And on ordinals.com, all of them show in chronological order from first to last.
Got it. That's cool. Yeah, and I like the... I remember seeing someone was doing this thing called, like, The Conjuring or something. It's like, a very ominous name. But it was about... You had to, like... I don't think it was in Bitcoin. It was in ETH. But it was, like, you had to send this asset, like, 1,000 times... for the conjuring to happen. And then once it gets stuck, just like the viral loop dies. But there's something about this for like a social loop that it's like you pass it around and it has provenance. And once it hits a certain threshold, like everybody wins. Everyone gets an airdrop or whatever it is. That it's a pretty cool mechanism that no one really uses. And you were just doing it because of freaking curiosity.
It's fun. Yeah. And there's a collection of 70 pieces, the 69 others in the rat. That I've been giving out to friends that I think are cool or I like a lot. And some of them I kept around and I reinscribed something else on them. And others I sent to artists, like the first seven, I think it distributed. I gave them to people and made them, and it was people from other chains for the most part, made them reinscribe a piece of their own on this thing in order to get it from. So like it started out, I think I auctioned the first three and gave 90% of the money to the Open Ordinals Institute. There were a lot of things that ended up being cool about this, but didn't catch. Like, there wasn't enough activity where people thought they could make money off of it, so it sort of fizzled out. But it did what it was supposed to do at the time. There's still room. Don't mess around with it.
That's... I freaking sick. You're a good brain, Donnie. Cool. Let's... okay, let's jump into some... That's a banger opener, for sure. I like this. But let's talk about some proof-of-work stuff. Fractal continues to be a hot topic. There's a bunch of topics we could touch on. But I want to start with, and it happened in the last episode, of like proof of work seems like a bad idea for me anyways, a bad idea for other chains because of how competitive it is to the L1. It's hard to compete with Bitcoin. So there's this like lingering question of, does proof of work for new chains, or is it kind of doomed to fail or be centralized, or all these kind of open questions? And Charlie, you said something on the pod last time of like, I think all miners should be selling their Bitcoin, which kind of becomes like, it's a pretty good token reveal mechanism because you're always bringing it back into the market. So maybe it does work, but I'm just curious, like first broadly, before we jump into Fractal stuff, like how do we think about proof of work working when it's so telegraphed and you know people are going to try and front run it?
I feel that so much of how we got to where we are in Bitcoin's existing proof of work model is very path dependent. I will actually wax a little Bitcoin maxi here and adopt some of the language that I think many Bitcoin maxis use to talk about Bitcoin's genesis, in that it is kind of this like inception moment, which is irreplicable. Never say never, but like, it is we had a very unique first 10 to 15 years of Bitcoin where it kind of relied upon it not being understood as this valuable asset by many people. And because of that, it allowed the proof of work like component of it to develop and build into this multi-billion dollar year revenue business as it is. And it's, I don't think I see that being replicatable. We'll see. If you want to look back at other cryptocurrencies which have tried to do this, they usually falter in a couple ways. One, which is that they can't bootstrap from zero, from the hobbyist to enthusiast to part-time hobbyist, enthusiast, professional to highly industrialized. You just cannot recreate that path dependency and adoption path of a network anymore. And that's almost a prerequisite for these networks to be bootstrapped. So then the other one is, because of that, anything that is proof of work is going to bend towards specified business models, specifically the Bitmains of the world who produce the actual computers which do this. And that has led to a number of different cryptocurrencies which are proof of work, which appear to be fair, but are actually more kind of propelled by the picks and shovels sellers of those businesses, which I don't think is bad. I just think we should be very aware that there is a long graveyard of things that led up to various proof of work cryptocurrencies before we got to CASP, which is the hot proof of work cryptocurrency right now, heralded as the second coming of Bitcoin. And yet I don't see how it is any different than the graveyard of other cryptocurrencies like it before. So proof of work is very special. It's very unique. It's the best kind of consensus mechanism, I think, that we have. But yeah, I think it's just a very good bet to be very skeptical about new proof of work networks, just at a long-term adoption to bootstrapping to proliferation phase. So that's my long answer about that question.
Donnie,
also, sorry, Casper people. Like, so if you're watching this and I'm shitting on Casper, I'm sorry, but like, here's the reality, guys. Like, this is not a cryptocurrency you own in 5 years. This is just the reality of it.
Maybe I'm in a bubble because I don't even know of Casper. So now I got to go Google, so I'm not behind the eight ball and whatever the heck that is. But
best luck. It's like the narrative. It's the ETH Classic or the whatever. The Monero people are also kind of on this train, but I like Monero, so.
Yeah, I'm curious about your thoughts, right, if you have any questions, Donnie, because you're kind of newer here, so like...
It seems to me that a big part of the charm of Bitcoin was that it started at CPU and moved to GPU, and then like to solve problems, moved to ASIC, and then ASIC sort of brought on commercial. ASIC and price action brought on commercial and kicked out people, which is going to parlay nicely into our next section that we're going to do, I think, on home mining. Is it path that to Bitcoin's success was very specifically because of every single thing about it, I think, like from my reading of it, sort of decide to fire something else up and try to emulate that kind of as like, it's like photocopying a photocopy, or eventually down the line, you just kind of, you're emulating something that's sort of like unemulatable in a way. And I don't see the difference or the benefit rather in proof of work consensus for things like Fractal or anything at the moment that's starting out and has the maybe MO that newer chains are going for, because they have a team, they have a company, they have a pre-mine. They're like, nothing about them is like Bitcoin, except for in one case, the scripting language. So like, it's like a shadow of a shadow. It's like, look, Dad, I can do a, I'm going to mow the lawn with you. It's like, especially in the lawnmower that's got like the bubbles is coming out of it next to your dad, but you're not really mowing the lawn, you know? That's what it feels like to me. I don't know. And I'm not trying to like speak ill of any of this stuff because it's well beyond my technical knowledge to actually poke holes in it. But from like a theoretical perspective, it just feels like it's missing a lot of the initial points and maybe even the end goal that Bitcoin has or had.
Yeah, I think if you consider that the best blockchains are going to be the most emergent over the course of their lifetime. So blockchains which are high work, which are concepted and launched in this like capital intensive, infrastructure intensive way, I'm not saying they don't work, it's just I'm very skeptical that they're going to be these open networks just by the nature of how they launch. And so I actually am quite fond of ETH, you know, crucify me, because it has been fairly organic, as much as Maxi's like to criticize his genesis. Like, it's had a pretty interesting, like, path-dependent adoption to where it is. I just don't think you can replicate Bitcoin. So trying to brand something as an improved Bitcoin, I'm like, yeah, there might be better ways of, like, producing blocks. I don't think you can get there for the time being, maybe ever. It's kind of like there are better protocols we could have built the internet on, better than TCP/IP. But the reason that is one of the protocols which backends the entire communications layer that is the internet is because of like its openness and its simplicity and just the way it happened to be there at that time in the building and adoption of the internet and why it remains the standard today. So yeah, that's kind of
there's
my
something
view
to be said for like the 15 years of proof of work history that Bitcoin has already. Like trying to start something now, you're always going to be 15 years behind that level of like having to unravel something, right? No,
or you just can't replicate it because like, you know, imagine you could tell investors that they can go back to 2010 and they can mine Bitcoin. You're going to have $100 billion worth more stuff mining Bitcoin. And you just cannot recreate that. The other component is actually, as I mentioned, ETH. There is a bit of like a come to Jesus moment on ETH right now with proof of stake and the merge. There's a lot of disillusionment, which weirdly enough, almost arrives at this view that I see some of the foremost tip of the spear ETH researchers saying maybe proof of work actually is the best way to produce blocks. Proof of stake produces blocks largely deterministically. Proof of work is a probabilistic block production technique. Proof of stake is a permissioned network technically at a fundamental level. It practices not that way, whereas proof of work is an open way of acquiring tokens. These are very core differences in first principles, places that these networks start from.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on it, which is like if you can front run, if you know that Bitcoin's going to be big in 2010, you can do, hold on, can you hear me okay? I sound weird
good.
In my head.
We're good.
Okay, I'm tripping. I'm having some weird echo. Anyways.
Read to me.
If you can front run it, because those first few years are so important when it comes to like supply coming on there, if you can just go super hard the first 4 years and then turn everything off, like you can have a ton of the supply and control the market. So that you see this with the token launches too, which is like when everyone tries to be early, money comes in, token goes crazy, maybe it gets traction, probably not. And then it slowly dies out and then like it hits a cliff and it just like drops off. And it seems like proof of work chains that try and mimic that and they're kind of like telegraphed and known, they do the same thing. You just have a bunch of more friction on the front ends to buy machines and do the stuff, but it ends up in the same destination. Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, I keep harping on this idea of path dependency of adoption and emergent adoption of these decentralized networks as something you just cannot. You would have to roll back the clock in time to go back and launch a different, better Bitcoin. It's almost impossible. So, you know, never say impossible, but I just think for the foreseeable future, it is Bitcoin is the proof of work network. And I mentioned this, like I think the merge for ETH was largely driven by a recognizance of this reality that this is a winner take most or all regime when it comes to proof of work. And I think that was actually smart for ETH to do, although it's resulted in what is currently kind of a disillusioned developer landscape.
Mm. One more quick question on this, and this is for you, Charlie, because you mentioned there's a graveyard of proof of work chains trying to bootstrap, etc.
Yeah.
And like I've heard of this in the narrative of like merge mine chains like Namecoin or whatever, that like they try and work. You look at the data, merge mining becomes very centralized very quickly. If just like two pools merge mine, they have like all of the hash rate, if you will. And so these things kind of have it's hard to get decentralization, and then it's hard to get users to have enough fees to make it worthwhile. So like, I don't know the context of this. Like, what's the brief history? Just like this 90-second history of like proof of work graveyard, and like why is bootstrapping such a big issue for these things?
I don't know if I can name, but I think Grin was one. There's Dash, but Dash is still big. Litecoin, Dogecoin flipped to POW and then got merged mined with Litecoin, which has actually been pretty successful. Namecoin, I forget the other merge mine side chains, the various forks of ETH Classic. Remember when the merge happened? Casp is a big one right now. Monero has another challenge where I know I'm just going to get absolutely dumpstered by these Monero people if they listen to this. But like, Monero keeps trying to be ASIC resistant and CPU mineable, which is a noble task. It's just that it tends to bend towards ASIC. Eventually, once it becomes profitable and scaled enough, you have ASIC specialized machines come in. So they have to keep forking to maintain that. There's really only one chain that has maintained proof of work at scale and continues to be proliferated and adopted, and that's Bitcoin. The others are kind of tacked on and really struggle for identity. Even Litecoin, like, which I think Litecoin just has a network effect. But I mean, okay, well, so does Bitcoin. But, you know, Litecoin has this emeritus status in proof of work blockchains. And I think really kind of functions more as a testnet. What do I think the future merge mining is? I have no idea. I look at Marathon, who says, we're just going to get right to the punch. We're just going to be the people who merge mine these. And it's us. Other people can participate. I think that's a smart idea. It's one of the more pragmatic, realistic, I would say like real politic approaches to launching a side chain. In which case, here I am now, this line of logic implicitly endorses Fractal. So.
Okay, well, let's before we jump to Fractal, let's briefly touch on this BitAx kind of pleb mining, decentralized mining initiative, because ZK Shark posted something of OMB fame about we're going to try and decentralize through this like grassroots effort. And BitAx, if people don't know, like these like self-contained mini devices, they're kind of like lottery machines. They have very little hashes, so they're more of a toy than anything. But the idea is like if you get 10 trillion of these out there in the wild, then it equals, you know, some part of the network. It sounds good on paper, but some people are very critical. This isn't going to go anywhere. So I don't know what your thoughts on this.
I think it's awesome. Yeah, I have thoughts too. But yeah, okay, cool. I was walking around at Mining Disrupt, and I was with ZK, and we were asking the tables just as like sort of like, I don't know, it seemed like a joke at the time to me, but they had all these like home mining devices that I didn't really take much stock of in my head. And we were like, hey, can we order like 200 of these? And they were like, actually, no, like we only have like 80 of them globally, I think. And he was like, okay, what about 1,000? Like, put in an order for 1,000. Is it possible to get 1,000 of these? And I think his point in asking all of this was not because he wanted to do one run of these and like distribute them to 1,000 people and be like, look at us go. We decentralized mining. He's like, there's no production for this. If it is a reality where somewhere in the future the hash power can be this much higher, that a collective of like 8 billion people when the planet's population is 16 billion, if they all have these instead of scratch-off lottery tickets because people actually do stolen mine blocks, it does happen. People hit with lottery miners. It's if the odds are like equally as good as winning the lottery and it has the benefit of doing this thing that helps the network not be controlled by like one entity, even if it's like in a small way, over the course of time, like if next year it doesn't outweigh Antpool, of course it won't. That's silly to even think that we could do that. But over the course of like decades, like if we really give a shit about Bitcoin on a long-term scale, why wouldn't we start initiatives like this that like can't hurt, you know? That's my take on it.
I agree with that. Part of Bitcoin's, part of its success is that there has been this ideological adherent component to it. And ZK does, he doesn't coin the term, but he really like beats it in that of the economically irrational participant. I think this is important to zone in on because it's largely going to be economically irrational to try to like run these types of independent initiatives. But that's also not the point. If you can reliably have 1% or 0.5% of the network be this kind of like uncompromising like group of folks, whether it's a small group of people or a bunch of individuals, like I think that's pretty significant because that's a block a day. That's a block a day, and if you can get whatever transactions in that block per day, that's 2,000 to 4,000 transactions of freedom transactions. I think that's very important for that heartbeat to stay alive. But and ZK talks about the BitAx, which I think is there's also a graveyard of home miners that lead up to this point, but I think the BitAx is different in that it's it's actually zeroing in on the right model and design for this particular stage in proof of work. I was talking to Luke Dash Jr. about this half a year ago, and I asked Luke what his favorite ASIC was. This is at a private mining conference in person. We didn't talk about ordinals. I talked to him about mining. I asked him what his favorite miner was, and he said the BitAx. So this is one of the things where, like, I think, like, real OG people who are not economically rational, Luke in particular, they get the BitAx. It is the rallying cry. It's like the flag that you carry for the independent, like, cypherpunk component of Bitcoin.
You were talking about financially irrational. Did you say financially irrational participants?
Economically
it's irrational.
Yeah. It's not always economically irrational, but it's, like, generally going to be.
It is because everyone that I've talked to so far who doesn't really understand, like, the long-term goal of something like this is going, well, why don't we just get something with higher hash power, plug it in at home, and then point it towards a miner or towards a pool? And the answer to that is you won't make any money that way. You'll probably lose money that way.
But, like, now you have to unplug your dryer and run that shit into, like, a 240
volt. Even
if
you could find a 120 to do that in, it's still going to soak up power. You still have to, it's like a microwave or something. It's like, I don't know, $100 a month or whatever. You're not going to make $100 a month doing that.
These are going to be hobby projects, and you can do those. It's just like, It's not plug and play to do that. We're talking for, like, most people, they need something which is plug and play, which fits into their existing, like...
Otherwise, it will not happen.
Yeah.
And in the case of, like, I think I know one family who has bought a lottery ticket and won a substantial amount of money over $1 million. And this is 40 years into my life. I know one family personally that I've, like, used to visit their home who that's ever happened to, yet people still buy lottery tickets every day. They don't even know someone who's ever won. It's that irrationally improbable.
And you also don't have to, you know, if you have a smaller rig and you're not consuming as much power, it's like minimal cost. Also, you don't have to lottery mine. It just happens that most BitAxes are lottery mining. You can contribute this hash power to a pool which has itself economically irrational goals, such as processing OFAC sanctioned transactions. But that's a very important dynamic and component of people to be participating in the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, I think the economically irrational is understated. The lottery is a good example where it's like, when you buy a lottery ticket, it's kind of like, it's a little sliver of hope. Is it crazy? For sure, 100,000%. But it's, you're trading $5 for a little bit of hope. Anything could happen. And, like, I could totally see, like, having a BitAx on this shelf over here. Whenever I look at it, I'm like, hey, man, you never know. It could be.
If you put that at Target, just put 3,000 of those in every Target across America and say you have X odds of winning $300,000 every single day that you have this plugged in at home. And it's going to cost you $5 to $10 a month to run. And it's $200 to buy off the shelf. Like, now people would be like, Bitcoin's a scam. But give it a few years. And it seems like, why wouldn't that work? Like, it seems stupid now, but I don't understand why it would work.
And there's another component here, which is the overall messaging, particularly that ZK communicates in his thought piece. One of my main themes this past couple of years has been that I think we've pretty much reached total addressable market capitalization of people who are going to be swayed into Bitcoin because of, like, last cycle's maxi narratives. How do you reinvigorate or invigorate people to do similar things, such as pleb mining, under which narratives? And ZK is very good at this, very good at creating a narrative and communicating this. I also have not really heard the pleb mining narrative from the angle of it fights against perceived or objectively real centralization across the mining vertical. And that, I think, is incredibly important because that adds an extra dimension to economic irrationality, which justifies it. So I think ZK has a... There's a couple paragraphs that ZK has which I don't really agree with. Like, I don't... as much as I love his energy arbitrage angle, like, I think that's kind of more of a big boy institutional infrastructure play, but, like, that's a sidebar. Like, that's not part of the core argument. Oh. I don't really think that works for, like, the home miner for the time being.
Yeah. I mean, he's just trying to point out that you could, like, sneak one of these in and not even notice the difference. Like, if you, if you live in an apartment building that has included electricity, you're not going to plug in a 240 because they're going to kick you out. Like, you can't plug in a real miner because they'll kick you out. But if you plug in this stupid thing that was going to cost you $5 a month and now costs you nothing, you can sneak it in under. Like, that's where the arbitrage comes in. It's like at a mental level, not an actual pocketbook level.
I think it's, yeah, we're going to see like a, what is it, The Godfather, where he like puts the gun behind the toilet in the restaurant and then you have to go find it. There's going to be like a million bit axes hiding all over the globe.
Did you say?
All kinds of workplaces.
10 and, under your desk.
I could see I can see it. I don't think that's crazy.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one thing I like too is, you know, ordinals, it's this new way to use Bitcoin. And like Casey had an intention, but it caused so many other things like second, third order that you would never see coming. One of them being maybe this is a new floor for like fee price, for example, where it's like, did he solve a security problem? Not fully, but we have glimpses of what it's going to look like. And you would have never guessed that per se. And so getting a bunch more people to pleb mine, I mean, I'm already feeling it. Where like I read a book on mining and I'm like, I have this heater over on the wall. Can I replace that with like an S9 and like heat this room enough that it makes sense? I would never have thought of that if I hadn't put that in my head. And if you get a bunch of people to do that, they're going to just be sitting there watching, you know, Dexter season 3, and they'll be like, I could probably put a Bitcoin miner right there. That might work. And like that wouldn't happen otherwise.
I also think that, even all this said, let's say this does become a huge movement and it still doesn't even barely register on the decentralization meter. What we see is a lot of the pleb movements result in the net increase in hands-on and high concept understanding of how Bitcoin works. And one of Bitcoin's strengths has been that its participants understand it really well. I actually think that one of the reasons that mining has become like it is and centralized at certain points is because a lot of people didn't really understand what's happening. And the more participants you have who understand how it works and why it works and why certain components are important is one of the prerequisites for a healthy and decentralized network. So it, like a lot of Bitcoin's game theory relies upon transparent communication of information. A lot of Bitcoin's game theory assumes that Bitcoin's fee market is representative of what it takes to have block inclusion. If you do away with that, if you don't have a fee market representative of like how you can get a transaction to a block, then Bitcoin is now this shadowy network, and that's not a fair network. So the more people who understand the attack vectors, the better. I think one of the big issues with maximalism is that it made a lot of the narrative myopic and said, we're only going to talk about Bitcoin's attack surface in these dimensions and not these, because these are socially acceptable. And these are, we just haven't been watching other blockchains. So we're unfamiliar with like how the struggles they've had. So if running a BitAx makes people understand mining very much, like way more hands-on, then that is worth it. Even if you lose everything, like, now you understand Bitcoin way better. I think that's a net win.
You should use at least the $200.
Well, the $200, not like your house.
But, you can't lose more than you put in. And the input is so low at this point that it just feels like, I don't know. It feels like something not worth fudding in so far as it's just not like a destructive thing in any way. I don't think it is.
Yeah, I'll even just shout out my other guy at Blockspace, Colin, who I have a bit of a tete-a-tete with. We kind of intentionally take opposite sides on this topic. He has just seen so many things like this that it's like this just kind of falls in a similar bucket for good reason. But he might be right. Like, this is the game for who is a competitive Bitcoin miner just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So that's always going to be an uphill battle. It may not be winnable. I just think if you don't throw in the towel now, throw in the towel into 50 years. Like, we're only on.
Does normalizing this one thing open the door for many other things that could be home centric Bitcoin mining tools, like, I don't know, heating devices or wash, like dryer, like actual physical dryers that are in your basement that have to produce a ton of heat.
Yeah, there's just I have two or three different versions of like retail marketed mining solutions here in my room right now. Actually,
but like this is just one more step towards something that actually does that, and everybody's, because we have so many things in our homes. I've thought about this a lot, and I don't really know if it has any value. It sounds like you've thought about this much. There are a ton of things that we have simply to create heat, and there's nothing doing work to produce that heat other than heating a coil. There's wasted energy there, or wasted opportunity for recouping the energy lost. So if this is something that normalizes that, then I'm all for it.
Why not?
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this. Does the physics work out? Like when it comes to just like on pure efficiency, does the freaking coil I have in my little wall heater at 1500 watts versus a home miner make sense? Or is it still just, it doesn't net out?
It's one watt in my knowledge of it. It depends on the
current design of ASICs don't lend themselves to like heat dispersion as you would make a heater, because the coil is designed, a coil in a heat in a heater is designed so that you can pass air through it and heat something. Whereas you would have to probably refactor the entire ASIC design for it to actually be a good heater. And you see this, like people who use the S9s to heat their like house or apartment, they kind of come up with these like contraptions to do that. Also, they can be very loud. It, like their fans are designed to be, you know, produce air, not be quiet.
You have to wear earplugs at home.
Yeah, but like I think it's very obvious. Like there's the largest output from Bitcoin mining besides Bitcoin is heat, and this is one of the most underutilized resources. What is it like? 30 to 40% of all energy in the world goes towards heating and cooling. So that Bitcoin mining fits very well into that on a long enough timeline where we got all the efficiencies.
Got it. Okay. We got 10 minutes left on our allotted time. Do we want to discuss Fractal, Magic Eden token launch, or wallets? Something you touched on, Donnie. I'm open to any of the, or Noster. Noster's going to save social media for the fifth time. We could touch on Noster if you want to.
I like that. Noster's fun, though.
Are you guys on Noster currently? Like, using it daily?
No. Yes to the first, no to the second.
Like, having an account and using Noster are separate in my mind, because everyone has a Noster account. They've gave it a shot over the past year. But then... yeah, something happens like Telegram or X getting banned on Brazil, and everyone's like, this is better, come use it. And then I go check
it.
I use
a ham radio or like a CB radio. Like, if everything stops, I'll go there. It's a parachute.
Exactly.
You turn it on every now and then to make sure it works, but you never,
Yeah. So I'm the same way. Like, I have an account. I sometimes remember to go check it, and then I'm like... there's nothing here, really. It's just a weird echo chamber, and I don't want to deal with the friction of trying to, like, add people's end pubs and get my friends list back. Like, it hasn't crossed that chasm yet, so.
Not easy enough. And I hate to be that guy, but it's difficult to understand how it works, because it's not fed to you in the same way that other social media platforms.
I was listening to a really interesting podcast with Jameson Lopp and Zach of Kafka. I was listening to an interesting podcast with Jameson Lopp on the history of email and how email kind of got, I don't say captured, but it just bent towards this basically permission system where it's almost impossible to run your own email server now. This, to me, and they didn't talk about Noster, but I've heard comparisons made here. This... to me seems a lot like we have a similar setting with email and Noster in their genesis, and similar incentives and similar challenges. It seems to me that Noster hasn't structurally solved any of the problems that led email to be a pretty centralized service provider system. Unless I'm missing something. So I look at this and say, I don't know if this is actually a long-term solution. In the short term, like, yeah, maybe for the next decade, Noster is a great great freedom tool. I don't know if I think it's a revolutionary product. I'm fine changing my opinion on this as I learn more information about it, though.
Yeah, I just
You can't
saw,
show that.
I forgot who posted the graphic. I feel like it might have been Jameson of like a Nostra really looks like this. It's like me sending data to just like 10 siloed computers, but they don't talk to each other. So it's just like I have 10 carbon copies, and then the end user connects to one of those relays, or maybe all 10, but there's no consensus amongst data replication on that side. So, yeah, he's making a pretty strong case that like you could see it going long-term centralized again, where it's like the largest relays just become the truth again, and it's no different than having Google run a Nostra relay, but you just trust the Google one because it's always online and super fast
Because
and
it's easy.
reliable, and it has all your friends on it. Exactly. So
Right.
like I could see that being the end game, so it doesn't feel like the
Entropy.
solution.
Yeah,
Everything ends up there.
the bigger problem seems to me is the existing structure of ISPs. To me, the thing that Nostra is trying to solve is something that is actually a problem with the existing internet service provider landscape. And I don't know how you solve this. I mean, I kind of understand Urbit, but I don't like
What
fully
do you mean by
understand.
ISP? Like at the level of like packet watching and like centralization or
Yeah, just the
censorship
ability to
versus just
freely
being
communicate. Yeah.
yeah. I can see that.
So I don't know. To me, that's maybe Nostra's a step towards the path of figuring out how to improve the landscape of ISPs being your window to the world. But I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting. I think one that's open to me is like zapping is pretty cool. Like lightning and zaps is actually pretty interesting. Being able to like frictionlessly the way I think about zaps is like it's a much higher signal of intent than a like. So you have like a share, a comment, a retweet, a like in like a hierarchy. And sending money is the highest signal possible that you liked that. And so I could definitely see algorithms of like this got the most likes, sort by money. And I think that's a paradigm that hasn't got traction on the internet to date, largely because I don't want to put my credit card in and have it charged for 7 cents a thousand times. But Lightning works good for that. So I think I think that paradigm on a better social media platform is going to be big, but Nostra's the one right now, so it's going to get traction because of that.
Yeah. Dude, the if we're able to figure out the micro payments, the lightning style micro payments, like, oh man, that's so cool. I love doing that. It's actually I love zapping on Nostra. It's addicting. You throw 100,000 sats in a wallet and you just kind of zap indiscriminately, 50 at a time. It's so cool.
Yep. I've been over the weekend I reread Szabo's mental transaction costs and micropayments paper from 1999, and holy shit, I've glanced at it before, but I haven't deep dived. Szabo, like, he gets a lot of love because he's an OG OG. Like, I think he did Bitgold and he wrote some very seminal papers, but that dude is a fucking genius. Like the way he wrote that paper, it's hard to refute any of it. It's so well articulated. Because I'm trying to figure out how to make micropayments work for kind of our companies and like try to bring this to life through my own kind of like will by being some help to some people. But his argument is that like whenever you do a transaction, you have like the fees associated, which is like the technological costs, Visa fees, et cetera. Those are the smaller fees of any transaction that you end up doing. It's the mental things of like, do I trust this person? Can I get a refund? Is this worth it? And micropayments make that way harder because you do it way more often. But there's something about zaps, which is like the trade is very clear. I'm just giving you money because I liked that post. So that one's easy. And the other one I was thinking about is like, if you go to an arcade like Chuck E. Cheese or something, you get this gift card, this game card, you put $20 on it, and you're going to spend that over the next hour. And that's a micropayment for 40 times over that hour. So there's something about time boxing micropayments is super interesting. Like, here, you have an hour to go play in the playground, go do a bunch of random shit, and then it closes down and you're going to, you know, do whatever. But yeah, I'm super bullish on this space.
One of the features that Strike, the app from Jack Mallers, had teased but never released was this idea of streaming Satoshis, where you could stream a sat every second or something like that. To me, this is one of the huge unlocks, and it blows my mind that we don't have easy ways to do this that I'm aware of. And this is where networks like Bitcoin or Lightning or other similar networks, which we haven't concepted yet, can like be amazing. It is crazy that we have a bi-weekly payment schedule as common in the West. It makes so much sense to be like streaming in real time for work. Yeah,
it's interesting. I mean, there's been companies trying that. There's what the current one that's on the docket that's kind of like raised some money is called FewSats, and we'll see if they achieve it. But they're doing like data storage as a service. You can stream for content. Fountain, which is like a podcast player.
Love Fountain.
They're part of it. They allow you to do this, where it's like every minute you listen, you stream. Yeah, I like the idea. This goes back to mental cost, though. Is like it actually changes the way you view content so drastically that it needs like a behavior change first. Because like the way Netflix works is it's just like pay $15, get access to a million movies. You're only going to watch 0.01%. So that's your main calculus. But if I could pay, you know, 2 cents a minute, and be like, okay, this movie is shit. Let me click off and go watch the next thing. I'm only out like a quarter, and then I can go to the next one. And you can like actually get bought in really quickly. But that actually makes me think like it kind of, I guess the hard part about streaming sats in that way is that you optimize for like, is this good right now? And you might not get to the juicy part. Like maybe a movie starts slow and it has like a really good ending, like The Sixth Sense. But it's like, no, this is boring. I don't like this.
Or the owner of the account, for the sake of Netflix anyway, the owner of the account is the person paying for it, but there's six other people watching. And I think that model would fail really quickly because people would just turn it on and walk away because the person who's actually paying for the thing is not the one using it for the most part. So I mean, I'm sure that comes into play somewhere.
Too granular, guys.
I do want to say something about Magic Eden.
But I want to go back and read that, Jacob. I think I actually have not even read that paper. I just looked at the headline and filed it away and never got around to it. Shout out to the Zabos of the world who wrote cool shit back in the day, which we just have kind of glossed over or forgotten.
It's called Micropayments and Mental Transaction Costs. It came out in May 1999, so 25 years ago, and it still holds up.
Wow. Yeah. And he wrote some other good stuff, even up through the late 2010s, that I would highly recommend as well. Nick Szabo is credited for concepting smart contracts as well. I think. Yeah.
Shit.
Yep, yeah. He did. Cool. He was the one that said that a basic point of sale system is doing a very basic smart contract when you run your credit card and it does some things in the background.
Wow.
Yep. So
Dawkins level stuff.
That would be my GOAT podcast guest for sure, is if he ever came back to get Szabo.
I don't think he's been seen for a long time. He's kind of dropped off the radar. I think he gave like a talk.
His last post on Twitter was like 2021, and he gave a talk at the 2022 Bitcoin conference, and that's the last I think he's been seen.
Ooh, his last actual post is a repost of BTC Kaz, who is the vice president of the Oklahoma Bitcoin Association.
Ooh.
Mic drop.
Flex.
Okay.
I think that's the podcast, y'all. We should probably drop it right there.
Shout out.
Can I throw 30 seconds on Magic Eden token just for food for thought for next time? Real quick.
Yep.
Because it's something I think I've finally digested what they're doing. It sounded just like a token drop, but no token drop is just a token drop. It sounds a lot to me like Optimism's retroactive public goods funding idea, where they get people to, they motivate people rather to build dApps in an ecosystem and reward them once it has already provided some sort of value to the network that they have laid out in front of the, well, to build the dApps on. So I think that what Magic Eden is doing is trying to get people to build on an open source platform dApps for encouraging runes, ordinals, NFT trading, blah, 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 whatever, and making this ME Foundation to pay those things, to pay the creators of the dApps once they have already created traffic. I don't know where it's going to live. I don't know what the supply is going to be. I don't know any of the price speculation stuff, but I think that's the concept. And it works for optimism. So I don't know why it wouldn't work there too.
Does it? Well, did they recently announced the optimism one though, right? They haven't been doing it. This is something they've announced recently that they're like
the optimism forward.
I thought so.
Over a year, I think.
Oh, interesting.
I've been watching because I had to write some. I used to work for a media company that did interviews with like layer twos and ETH projects. And I had to interview a bunch of optimistic roll-ups and do a bunch of research on them. And I was on the Optimism website reading about this. Maybe they just launched it in reality recently, but I thought it was up and running about a year ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Got it.
I don't know. Mm. I don't know what they were relaunching.
Cool idea. I'm excited for the token drop. I hope it resurrects the token frenzy again. But cause a lot of people to download the Magic Eden wallet. I'm interested to see how this shakes up the wallet landscape. So I use everything and I store all of my important stuff in Sparrow wallet type things. So
I have everything loaded across every wallet. It's buckshot everywhere. You know, no one can find it but me, and I can't lose anything because of that. It's everywhere. It's all over the place. It's every platform.
If you don't know where it is, the Rinch attack surely can't be to find it either.
If you ask me, I couldn't tell you, but I can find it. Like you say, Don, where's the silverware drawer? I don't know, but put me near it, and I'll tell you exactly where it is.
Yeah, you can't Rinch attack somebody if they don't know either, so it's perfect.
Yeah, right.
That's a Sun Tzu quote. The best smoke screen against your enemy is if you yourself don't know what you're doing.
Yep.
Put all your stuff in the blender and dump it out.
It also goes biblical. Like, don't let the right hand know what the left hand is doing. It's like, I don't know what that shit is. Do I even know that? I don't think it's
God way of explaining two of two multi-sig.
Yeah, 100%.
Way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Legend. Absolute legend. All right. I think that's the pod. Thanks, guys.